Amy Tan, toward the end of Saving Fish from Drowning, the book takes a very strange turn and turns into a satire of the news. When you were working early on, did you have any idea that you were going to take it into this purely satirical framework?
Later in the story, I became aware that I was really writing also, not just about intentions, but how intentions are influenced by beliefs and how our beliefs, person to person, vary so much. At the same time that I was thinking about this question of intentions, I saw, and I can't remember where, I think I might have been in China listening to international news, and I heard somebody use the expression, "We don't report the news, we also make the news." And I thought how true that was in many situations for the good, that you would highlight on a situation that needed to have the attention, but how also frightening the concept could also be. You know, that you make a reality by what you report. And then, at the same time, these reality shows were becoming very popular as though they represented a kind of reality. And did these reality shows then, in fact, influence what people perceived to be real? And so this whole notion of reality and what's truth became an issue for me, and that people wanting to be on reality shows to show their reality. And so that became part of the book. Going back to the question of what is truth, what are illusions, because illusions figure very much into the country of Myanmar and its Buddhist beliefs.
As I was reading the section where our character Harry Bailey is used by the Myanmar government almost to create tourist travelogues as he searches for his missing friends, I kept thinking of Fox News in America and how easy it becomes, put in that context, to manipulate anybody.
Well, I think we can look at all news forms and say that, you know, what are their beliefs to begin with and how have they reported the news? Yes, and, you know, we can look at Fox, the difference between Fox and, say, a PBS-type program and how different they are. And you'll have people, the conservatives, saying, you know, we have to get fair and balanced. PBS is not fair and balanced. And the other side says Fox News isn't fair and balanced. They're pushing one side or the other. And really, there is also responsibility on the part of the viewer, the listener, the reader, to understand that these things that are presented as truths, as facts, are an interpretation, are in part based on opinion. The very fact that you select only certain things to report makes it a kind of bias.
Well, yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that one of the tragedies of the idea that there is no objectivity, which popped up around 15 or 20 years ago, mm-hmm. is that suddenly if there is no objectivity, you have to present two sides of any given story, even if
right.
one side is the truth and the other is the lie. So that truth becomes the Democratic view and the Republican point of view rather than someone's lying, someone's telling the truth.
That is also, I think, a problem is that what we look at is presenting different sides of the, quote, truth, is that it's often a dichotomy. It's a very strident dichotomy. It's not anything in between. We present the Republican side, the Democratic side, and there's very little in between. And so I think somehow maybe the truths of the world do lie in between, and we don't know the means to get there.
Well, I would have thought that at one time. At this point, it seems the Republicans are doing all the lying, but that's just me.
Yes, and I can guess maybe you're a Democrat, and you know, so am I. But what I'm interested in as a fiction writer is how do these diverse opinions occur? How does one side try to push its views on the other, particularly in a country where the pushing includes killing?
Amy Tan, in The Opposite of Fate, there's a wonderful essay giving advice to writers, and you give five pieces of advice on what writers should do. One, avoid cliches. Two, avoid generalizations. Three, find your own voice. The fourth is the most interesting one, which is show compassion, which means no matter how satirical you get, I guess you need to have the reader care about the people and the events.
Mm-hmm.
And five, ask the important questions.
Along with the avoid cliches, I would say don't trust absolute truths. Find your own. You know, this goes along with finding your own voice. those are what I think the reasons are for writing, not to create in a pretty little package what everybody else already knows and what you assume to be the truth, but to find something that you never knew existed.
Can you create art if you're just looking at commercial value?
I don't think so, because the motivations there are so very, very different. The end result that you want has to do with getting it out into the public market and appealing to that. So from the outset, your approach is not about discomfort. It's about how do you get somebody to do one particular thing.
When you're working on a book, consciously and unconsciously, things change in your life. When you were writing this book, Saving Fish from Drowning, the Lyme disease happened. Did you have to put the book down for a time?
I really couldn't write for a couple of years. I mean, I was infected in 99, and it could go on for a while, as what typically happens to some people. My immune system was enough to hold back the worst of it. I still had problems. I had joint problems. I had insomnia and headaches and things like that. But in 2001, I think it might have been because I went on a six-month book tour, and I was so exhausted, my immune system just gave up. And from then on, I was so tired, and I couldn't think, I couldn't concentrate, I had no motivation to do anything, and I knew something was terribly wrong. At first, I thought that I had depression, and I went to a psychiatrist. To my psychiatrist's credit, she did say, I think there's also something medically going wrong, and I think you need to get a lot of medical tests, which I did. But it took another 2 years to find out what the problem was.
You were in the studio in CNN in Manhattan when the planes hit the towers. Were you writing at that particular time, or was that the period when you couldn't write?
That was the period when I was having a very difficult time writing. What I had a lot of was anxiety. I just remember I was almost imprisoned by my anxiety. And my friend, my assistant, came with me to the studio. I had my dog. I could never be without certain familiar things. And then that happened. You know, the World Trade Center was being attacked. I was in CNN, the heart of the news world. And I was the next thing that was supposed to be on. I was talking about a children's program. And suddenly I was the thing that was canceled as the world, it seemed to me, was coming to an end. Well, my world had already come nearly to an end, and so I just felt it kind of is following along the same pattern anyway. Maybe this is all part of it. That was such a mirror, I think, of that anxiety I felt. I'm not making my anxiety, you know, to be any worse or the same as what was going on in the country, but it seemed to me as though now what I was feeling was what I should feel. After 9-1-1, the sense of unpredictability, of saying why, of sensing danger all the time.
Did, at that point, the conception of your book, Saving Fish from Drowning, had you been far enough into it so that the conception could change?
I had to look at my own notions of survival and what I thought was important. There was somebody driving me. All of a sudden, it occurred to me, I sort of snapped out of this me, 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 what's going to happen to me? And I looked at the driver and I said, where do you live? And he said, Queens. And I said, you know, I'm thinking at this moment we're all going to die. He said, you know, I think you should get back to Queens and be with your family. And he said, are you sure? And I said, yes. He said, you can walk. I said, yes. And I just decided I'm going to die. I just need to get home to my family. And that was okay. I accepted it. The minute I got out of the car, a dozen people surrounded the car yelling, I'll give you $1,000 to get me out of here. Where are you going? Queens. Yeah, great. And then I just had another thing. Oh, you know, I've just made a very fatal decision, but that's okay. The Karen have a belief, and I didn't make it up in the book, and that is that they all must stay together. They must stick together. And I thought, how true. We must all stick together. That's my feeling. I needed to be with my family. And then if I died, if we all died, that was okay.
Saving Fish from Drowning concerns the idea of killing something in order to save it, which of course brings up the idea of what we've been doing in Iraq. On some level, was that ever in your mind when you were working on this book?
Well, I started the book way before the events in Iraq took place. But as I was writing the book, it was not just the war in Iraq or Afghanistan. It was a number of things that were coming into play. And I was even thinking about my own notions about Vietnam. And I was surprised. I thought it was so obvious this notion of providing what you felt was going to be good for a country and then having to have some killing being done. And how do people morally justify that? And that we are all over the board. If you were to take a country like the United States and poll people, the moral response to people are all over the place. And it has a lot to do with what they believe is the right thing, where they get the truth. So it's that same continuum that I have been looking at: truth, belief, intentions, and action, outcomes that are unpredictable, moral response for good and bad consequences, and who suffers or benefits from the consequences.
Amy Tan, whose latest book is Saving Fish from Drowning. I'm Richard Walensky for Cover to Cover on The Morning Show.